How many people were here last night?
Quite a few.
Okay, quite a few not. Okay, just wanted to figure out how much summary I should do. Remember the last time I began, I quoted a French author named Pascal. And he said, I would have written a shorter letter, but I did not have the time to do it. Is that correct now? Still not correct.
Huh?
Well, the point was, is what is that phrase you put on? Truths or
something? Elegance is truth spoken concisely.
Truth?
Elegance is truth spoken concisely.
Elegance is truth spoken concisely. Just like when you're editing, and it takes a lot of time, but the body of work gets less. So this is a class where I want to summarize the whole Sikshastika. And I want to do it by creating a theme. And the theme is that one idea that connects everything else in the body of work, even if apparently not connected. For example, the Bhagavatam has so many different... any book, any composition, any work has one point where everything else is connected. Even anyone who has any experience speaking, a real good class is where a person actually, let's say reading the Bhagavatam, you've actually figured out what point it is. And then you may say so many other things, even simple things, but they have a kind of dynamicism because they're really hitting on particularly one point. So I really want to try to do that with the Sikshastika. Come down to, you know, really one point. I actually wrote it out. We can discuss it. It'll come in a while. And then go through the verses and see how they connect to that point. And obviously it's very, very significant because this is Lord Chaitanya himself. There's only 8 verses. Anyway, I don't want to embarrass you, Satyaraj, but I'm glad that you're here. So, I had a really nice realization I just want to share with you at the beginning, going through it. On the 5th verse of the Sikshastika, he's saying that I've fallen into this ocean of birth and death. Peace, pick me up from this ocean of death. And it came from a commentary I was reading on that verse, and it said that Lord Chaitanya comes down the stairs of compassion to the suffering devotee to teach them. And I was doing an article on the problem of evil, and I was discussing it with one professor. And we were discussing the article, and one of the Vaishnavas... responses to that problem, that there's evil that exists in the world, that God is supposed to be all-powerful, he knows everything, and he's good. So how can there be evil? He knows that. He knows it's happening. If he's all-powerful, he should do something about it. If he's good, he would. So reconcile this. And I was speaking with the professor, who's a Vaishnava, and he said, you know, the one thing I like about Christianity is that they have kind of answer to it, that, you know, like, God himself is suffering. So I thought that Christ element is also in the Sikshastika in that 5th verse. Because from the 5th verse on, Lord Chaitanya himself is coming down kind of and experiencing what the devotee is to advance in spiritual life. So first let me give a little bit of a... history of the Sikshastika, but very, very briefly. There are 8 verses. Most scholars agree that these are the only 8 verses that we can actually verify that Lord Chaitanya wrote. And when he's age of 24, he took sannyas, he was traveling, and then he went into his vajra. And they're listed in a book by Srila Rupa Goswami, the Padyavali. Not really in any particular order, but then we find them in the last chapter of the Sikshastika, and this is also significant. The last chapter of Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's significant because of what's called hermeneutics, how you analyze what a text means. What is the real theme of the text? What's really significant is what's said first and what's said last. That's one of the most important things. So the last thing is the Shikshastakam, prayers. And it's a very, very beautiful scene because Lord Chaitanya, and we can learn a lot how to practice Krishna consciousness, whatever level we are, from his life. But Lord Chaitanya, it's the end of his life, it's the last chapter. What is he doing? He's relishing with his confidential associates the different bhavas of Krishna consciousness. Bhava means moods of devotion. And he's relishing them. And this is what Vaishnavas do. And if they get into that relish of a particular mood, they may carry the whole night on one mood. And I'm thinking of Prabhupada's disappearance day in Govardhan, where I am. We have very exalted Vaishnavas there. And each one is in the mood of Guru Bhav, you know. And one story, one song after another about Prabhupada, you just go on relishing. So this is what Lord Chaitanya would do. He would relish different aspects of Krishna consciousness, focus on particular verses that exemplify that mood. Because that's the purpose of Vaishnava literature, not just the philosophy, but what's called rasa tattva, the poetry and the drama, would encapsulate moods of devotion so that those who are qualified, who would be listening to them, would feel the same thing. That's what poetry does. Poetry and drama doesn't just explain what something is, it recreates what something is. Is anyone taping this, by the way?
Oh.
Okay. There's the person who's... You're taping it? Bring it up closer. There's the person who does it's not here.
What?
Yep.
Okay. So, it communicates a particular mood. It actually makes you feel it. That's what drama does. And the whole tradition of Krishna consciousness, even the Bhagavatam has two purposes and two ways of appreciating it. One is intellectually, you have to understand the message. And when you get the message, that the ultimate message is you have to surrender to Guru and Krishna and is surrendered Vaishnav. And when you do that and enter the door of bhakti, then you read it in the form of relishing it. And you're relishing your relationship with Krishna. Whatever you read in the Bhagavatam, it stirs your particular mood of relationship with Krishna. So Lord Chaitanya is doing this with his confidential associates. And it goes to the subject of Nam Tattva. The bhav of just thinking about the holy name and kirtan. And what it does to one. And he begins, Lord Chaitanya begins to quote verses. And he's sharing this with his associate. And then he quotes a verse in the 11th canto, which explains the Yuga Dharma, who is the incarnation who spreads the particular process of spirituality for the particular age we're in. And he quotes this verse in the Bhagavatam, Krishna Varnam Tusha Krishnam Sangha Pangasta Parshadam Yagyai Sankirtanat Prayer Yajanti Hisa. So may those who are intelligent will do this kirtan of Krishna. And then when he gets into that verse, then in his mind he begins to remember his mission, because this is at the end. And remembering his mission, remembering how his internal mission is to relish the mood of Krishna, of his topmost devotee, and his external mission, what he did for others, is to give it. So now it's the end, and he's actually spread this mood, given this spontaneous devotion around the world, and now he's actually realizing it and experiencing it. And in that appreciation, he begins to chant the Shikshastaka. But it says a very interesting thing now. He said, and now he's relishing it. He's chanting it to actually feel those different moods of devotion. So this is the significance. And now this is from Satyaraj's book. Can they get it online, or the whole thing is sold out now?
No,
what?
Amazon.
And what's the name of the book?
Sri Chaitanya's Life and Teachings.
Sri Chaitanya's Life and Teachings. A beautiful chapter on the Shikshastaka in that book. And Satyaraj very nicely sums up what it's about. And from that, I'm going to even hone it down further and come up with a theme specifically. And then we'll go through the various verses. He says, if chanting the holy name is at the center of Mahaprabhu's profound philosophical system, his eight prayers known as the Shikshastakam, Siksha, teachings, Astakam, eight verses, tell us what chanting is about. So this is about Lord Chaitanya's mission, his message. And it's a very personal thing, because it's the process of how he gave spontaneous devotion, and it's the process of how he relished it. So in these eight verses, he's going to actually explain that. Now, I want to hone down the theme even a little bit more specifically. And I came up with three subjects that the Shikshastakam is about. It's about faith. It's about when you advance in Krishna consciousness, there's different levels of faith. So Lord Chaitanya says, we're progressing in Krishna consciousness according to different levels of Shraddha or faith. And faith is basically your appreciation of something. Prabhupada said, unflinching trust in something sublime. Where you think your happiness lies is your faith. So this is about faith, that to surrender and serve God, Krishna, is the highest thing. And Lord Chaitanya is going to show his students how this progresses through different stages. Beginning with appreciation, then you have, and this faith, one definition I really liked, it's not a blind thing, it's trust by evidence. And the evidence is your experience of the sublimity of something. So once you have this preliminary bhakti lata bij, Brahmanda Brahmate, Konya Bhagavan Jeev, Guru Krishna Pasadi Pai, Bhakti Lata Bij, you're wandering from universe to universe, from species of life to species of life, until by the mercy of Guru and Krishna, you get the Bhakti Lata Bij. And what is this? It's this experience. Somehow it comes by mercy. No one will get this except Satyahari and Satyaraj. When you least expect it, you're elected. You got it? Okay? You want to finish in such a hurry? You're the lucky guy. Smile, you're on candy camera.
I always feel that God has a poor pool of selectees to get people to do stuff. the people that get to do stuff.
So when you're least expected, somehow this comes into your heart. Somehow your heart is ready, and you get this experience. And then you get an appreciation of it, that this is good. It's good to serve God. It's good to serve Krishna. And then somehow or other, that brings you adaushatata sadhu sangha. It's so good, I'll be with people who do it. Then it's so good, I'll practice it. Then it's so good, I'll give up those things that are unwanted to it. Then it's so good, I become fixed in doing it. And then it really starts to take off. Then it's so good that you can't stop it. The taste, anything you do, you pull it back. And then it's so good that you don't have to pull it back. It's just flowing there. And then the voice in your heart is just so loud, so singular, that I want Krishna. I want to serve Krishna. It becomes so consuming that God actually hears that voice. And he ingresses in your consciousness his own internal potency called bhava. And then that thickens. Sandrandana Visheshatma, till there's nothing in your consciousness. It's samadhi. Samadhi means that the focus is so thick that you're not even cognizant of anything outside of that. You're just so focused. So this is being described, and then humility. That the faith and that conviction, it moves with your humility and also your chanting. So these three things are progressively moving through the Shikshastaka from the beginning. And it's enthused in your chanting. Because what chanting is, it's not just syllables. It's God hearing your heart. Satya Hari, he wrote one of the great articles in the Vaishnav Journal, that Satya Raj, on kirtan. And his definition of kirtan that he gave was fantastic. I love it. It says, when the bhava in the heart is expressed through the discipline of music. Mm-hmm. So the kirtan is reshaping one's heart into sound. And what pleases God is our love, and it's expressed, it's reshaped in that vibration. And that's what pleases God, and that deepens and deepens and deepens. So these three things progress: your faith, the depth of your humility, and the quality of your chanting, which is empowered by your humility and your faith. And as Satya Raj wrote, his prayers will tell us what chanting is all about. And this is what it's about. It's about this bhava and this faith and how it increases. And when it increases, and when it is added to that chanting, you advance in Krishna consciousness. So this is the theme I wrote down. This is the theme of the Shikshastakam, which is the theme of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings. So this is what I wrote down, and this is the thread we'll follow. We should gradually advance step by step in our faith and devotion to the goal of prema bhakti by chanting in deeper and deeper levels of humility. So I'll say that again. We should gradually advance step by step in our faith in devotion to the goal of prema bhakti by chanting in deeper and deeper levels of humility. And then one other point I wanted to make is in the introduction here is, it's so nice because this is called Acharya Leela. So when you follow Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's life, he's come as a devotee. And he shows you how to do it. And these are the expressions of his heart, how he actually advances in spiritual life. Now, one thing was mentioned by Jai Jagannath today in class also about this 20th chapter of the Shikshastaka. Between each verse, Lord Chaitanya is giving a little preamble where it says, his humility has deepened. And then you go to the next level of faith, which is expressed in these prayers. And then sometimes it uses the term ati dainya. Dainya itself is utter humility. It's not just folding your hands. It's this intense feeling of shelter and surrender. I give the example of a child in the mother's arms. It just feels this incredible shelter. It feels this I call it happy small, this humility, where it's just so satisfied. It doesn't want to be independent. It doesn't want to take the mother's position and control her. It just wants to bask in the shelter and dependence of a worthy object of shelter, which means a worthy object of love. that gives one love. So every verse is impelled by this. And now in the commentary I read, it made one point which I want to discuss in depth before we get to the verse. And I really thought about it, and this time I wrote it down. Because I get it. So it said, if you have food and hunger, they decrease each other. When you have more food, you have less hunger. When you have less food, you have more hunger. So these things just decrease each other, but humility and praying increase each other. And it becomes kind of an anomaly, because praying is the greatest treasure. And when you have the greatest wealth, because the humility increases. And one of these verses, it's in between, I think, the third and the fourth verse, is this verse called Prema Swabhav. The mood of prema is that I don't even have a scent of it. So it's kind of an anomaly. You have something, and this something is increasing. And the humility increases to such a degree that you feel you don't have it. It's like someone who, like, you know, he's one of the 1%, and his money keeps on increasing. Of course, they also feel, I don't have any. But that's another story. It just increases, increases. I don't have any. I don't have any. So this anomaly, where prem is increasing and humility is increasing, to the extent that you think you don't have it, you don't have it, you don't have it, that's hard to understand. So I gave five reasons why prema increases humility, and then four reasons why humility increases prema, or love. So I want to start with those. So prema increases humility because you have a relationship with God, and the more you love God, the more God reveals himself to you. And the more God reveals himself to you, the more small you feel. The greatness of God. The simple example I had is I was up in the Himalayas, and then somehow I had to come down, and I was leading a bus party, and then, you know, the Himalayas, you know, when I was young, I thought the Himalayas, it's like, you know, you look up and it's a high mountain, but it's mountain peaks and mountain peaks and mountain peaks. And I got off and I was just in awe. You know, the bigger it is, the more insignificant you feel, and somehow or other, the better you feel. The better you feel, because you feel much happier like this than like this. And we all know it. So prema, God reciprocates, and the more you realize about God, the more you actually realize about yourself, because we are in relationship to God. And the relationship, the distance, at least in grandeur, and what to speak of love, we actually have a standard. Then prema also cleans the heart. Love is what makes the heart clean. And there's something about something clean that makes dirt appear more apparent. Right? If someone has a messy room and you come in there and you kind of, you know, come in and you take off your jacket and throw it here and then knock off something, no one cares. But go into a room of someone who is, you know, a clean freak. I'll tell Satyaraj a joke too, but I stayed with Tamal Krishna Maharaj, and he got this new, someone gifted him this new couch, right? And I spilled a drop of water on it, and it was the kind of thing where it stained. You know those type of even desks where water, it stained. Boy, was I in trouble. But you know, you came into my room and it wouldn't be the same thing. So when your heart is very, like Raghunath Das Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami was so pure that he became so renounced, all he was taking was buttermilk, and it wasn't seal test. buttermilk, you know, it's just the water, and that's all he was taking, and he was just feeling. Like, I'm such a devotee. So somehow that love, and these are extreme examples, but even in our own case, whenever we have that devotion and service and love, it takes away the pride, and it's actually a good feeling. We no longer feel, I am the center. And another thing about prema is the reciprocation from God, love from above, is called affection or mercy. And there's a very interesting thing about mercy. When you feel mercy, it's undeserved kindness. So when someone really gives you something more than you deserve, it makes you reflect on your lack of qualification for it. So someone who feels mercy, and I give the example of a child. If a child is spoiled, no matter what the parents give, they never feel love. But if a child is humble, then whatever little affection is there, they feel it so profoundly, and they like it. They like it. This is something great that I don't deserve. And it doesn't impel their... It doesn't create low self-esteem, because real self-worth is being loved. So you get, the more you're the object of mercy, the more you feel love. So you're not feeling low self-esteem. The child is not feeling, oh my God, I'm just a little kid, I can't do something, I can't control my bowels, I have no independence. The child is just feeling sheltered. He's feeling, I am worthy of love. So, and then the other thing is that prema is a hunger. It's a want. And the desire tends to make you feel like you don't have the thing. Like, we want food, right? We gave the example. You know, you're hungry. So if, the more hungry you have, the more you feel this, I don't really have food. Guy with a big appetite, you may put a lot there. He says, this is nothing. I have nothing. So it's like that. The prem, the love, which is Krishna's energy, increases, increases, increases. And it's, I want. I want. I want. You don't feel like you have it. So these are very high feelings, but at the same sense, if we look at our practical relations in the world, relationships in the world, any experience of some affection or love or relationship we have, we feel this too. The more love that we have, the more humble we will feel. And finally is the Shikshastakam is the utmost humility, because it is Radha's love. And there's a separation that she feels that is called Vipralamba. And Vipralamba is only in Braj. It's called separation. But it's the separation from intimate love. Because in Vrindavan there's intimate love. The love is, God is my son. God is my friend. God is my lover. It's very, very intimate love. So it's more forceful. So when you are separated from it, you feel the greatest poverty. Ironically. So it creates humility when you have that love and that hunger. And now, humility increases prema. Again, I gave the example of spoiled child. When you're humble, you can feel mercy. When you're not, you can't. Right? I mean, I'll put all this humility. If you want to know the relationship of humility and prema and love, take an example of a big arrogant leader of a country. And imagine them practicing prema bhakti. Why not? Why not? Because pride puts one in the center. And that's exactly the place where one doesn't feel love. People who vie for the center, want to be in the center, promote the center, it's hard for them to feel love. And therefore, there was that verse today that was discussed in the Bhagavatam class and coming attractions. My Monday morning greetings is on that verse. That one who is born in a family of dog eaters, if he's a devotee, he can deliver his whole family. But one who has all 12 brahminical qualities, self-control, tolerance, religiousness, but has prestige, has pride, they can't even deliver themselves. This is no. So humility is required for love. And this is also a very, very important point too. Is the reason why we are not feeling love for Krishna. Then there's really one reason and one main reason. Because his love is there. It's like the sun is there. Well, like, look at me, I'm white. Well, why am I? The sun is out. Why am I so pale? The sun is out. You fool. You stay indoors all day. Don't blame it on the sun. You stay indoors all day. Don't blame it on the sun. So we stay indoors with our ignorance and mostly our offenses. Our attitude. Aparad means to distance yourself from worship. That prevents bhakti from... Bhakti, I heard this statement, I don't remember where. Bhakti is very, very simple. What's difficult is avoiding offense. And it says, just as the eyelids cover the eye from dust, humility covers our consciousness from offense. It protects us from offense. Because a humble person is thinking of others before themselves. And offense is caused by people who think of themselves before others. So this is the parallel, and this is what Lord Chaitanya wants to highlight, that chanting will increase humility. Humility will increase your chanting because it'll increase your love. And the combination of these two is Lord Chaitanya's mission. You know, Prabhupada, I was thinking of Prabhupada's humility, you know, I quoted last time, I don't have the quote here today, someone said, Prabhupada, you are a Paramahamsa. Prabhupada said, no, I am lower than you. He said to his disciple, I'm just a servant. So, so these things. Now we'll kind of go to the verses. I had a diagram from which I forgot from one book called Bhajan Rahasya, where Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Do you have that diagram? You ever see that diagram? Where Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he wrote a book on connecting the Shikshastakam to your own personal practices of chanting with the verses you should chant. And so we'll go now through one verse at a time, and we'll connect it with that kind of theme. So the first verse is the seven glories of the holy name. There's seven glories of the holy name. Cheto, Darpanam, Marjanam, Bhava Maha, Devagni, Nirvapanam. And we went over them in a previous class. And then I coined a phrase which I think is very, very important, that I called the Shikshastakam the Kirtan Sutra. Because what a sutra does, no, the first verse specifically, because what a sutra does is it codifies a body of knowledge. And it begins by promoting the supremacy of the particular school of thought that's being promoted. So this begins in that way, because it says, Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtana. That Param, Supreme, Vi, Supreme, Jayate, Supreme. This is the supreme thing. This is, even in bhakti, even in the practices of bhakti, this is the topmost thing. And this is Lord Chaitanya's mission. And taking to this process is what's going to propel you in those levels of faith and that depth of humility. And the first verse, because the level of faith represented is Shraddha, or appreciation. Because even to enter the first verse, you have to first have the bhakti lata bij. Somehow there must be some appreciation. So now, how does your appreciation increase? Well, you hear about the glories of the activity that you are beginning. So it's very important. We hear the glories of Krishna, the glories of something, anything. So we're hearing, these are the glories of the holy name. Cheto Darpana Marjanam, there's seven. It cleanses the heart. It extinguishes the fire of material existence. And it keeps on progressing. It gives you all good fortune. It awakens direct realization and knowledge. It gives you unending bliss. And then you become overwhelmed and bathed in ecstasy. And this is the process. This is what will happen. So he's saying basically, take to this process. And what is the process that does this? That's the essence of Lord Chaitanya's movement. That's going to be explained here step by step how it elevates you. It's Sankirtan, not just Kirtan, Sankirtan, complete Kirtan, qualitatively complete, quantitatively complete, complete because it's done with others. And it has that compassion to it, because it's not just done for yourself, it's done with others. And because it's done with others, if it's done in the proper way, it's less egotistical, because real prem kirtan, it's not about yourself. And I just say something. This is actually rasa theory. Rasa theory is if you really want to experience some deep emotion, you have to get rid of the egotistical, limited mind. And one way to do it is an aesthetic experience. An aesthetic experience is experiencing something as if in one mind. You're a teacher, if a kirtanier, there's a good class, there's a good kirtan, you're feeling the audience is one mind, and they have some upliftment with it. And the upliftment is an aesthetic experience will help you transcend the limited eye, the egotistical eye. So when you do kirtan, and you do kirtan, and you have it with others, which has the element of compassion, and it has the element of delimiting or helping you overcome the limited self, the effect and the absorption is increased many, many fold. And qualitatively means that it's done in a particular mood, not entertainment, but really prayer and to please Krishna. And Sri Krishna Sankirtan, It's not only Sankirtan, but it's Kirtan of Krishna, who's Akhilam Rasa Murti. He's the full embodiment of love. So you're entering a relationship with God who can give himself fully. And Sri Krishna Sankirtan, it's also done in the mood of Radha, which is selfless love. So this is Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtan. And when you do this, it will move you through all these steps. Even that one, boy, how I wish for Baba Mahadevagni Dir Mahapanam to extinguish the forest fire of material existence. And it's a forest fire because no one knows who started it. It starts without your will, and you can't get rid of it by yourself. So it's a great analogy. What we are all going through in the insurmountable material existence. It's insurmountable, and it's insurmountable because these impressions, we're so addicted to them that even though they ruin us, we can't give them up. Life after life. Every life we go through the same. I want to be the controller. I'm really a great person. You know, I'm really nice. I'm altruistic. I'm everything. But this is not my way, and I'm upset. And this that I don't have, I want. And I'm so compassionate and altruistic and so nice. And everyone loves me. And like, and we go through this whole crazy thing. Oh, my God. They insulted me. Oh, my God. I can't. Me being wrong? You're wrong. Oh, I'm wrong? No. Oh. And going through that again and again and trying for it. I'll be the center, but now I have the mode of goodness strategy. I'll be a little bit more sattvic than others. I'm a Brahmin. Okay, now because it's Sunday afternoon, I'll tell a story. Okay, but I want to keep on the verses, but I was just a young guy and they gave me a stick which is called sannyas. So I'm like 31 years old and now I'm a spiritual leader in India. And I actually am convinced that I am. Because I'm Prabhupada's disciples and we're better than anyone and charge and we're fine. As one of my godbrothers said, we may have been a little crazy but we were fired up. So I was once preaching to the highest class Brahmins in India, in Alabad. And I was sitting up in a seat, and they were sitting there. And I watched the difference in how we ate. Okay? The preparations, theirs would get like smaller, just as they would pop it into their mouths. So each preparation would get smaller. And to me, the turmeric was soaking up my sleep. And these are like high class Brahmins and on. So, yeah, so now I told a story and I forgot my point. Anybody remember my point?
The one mind.
Go ahead, Fred, you can do it.
Humility.
The
humility.
Control.
What?
Yeah. Then we can never give it up. It's insurmountable. Like giving up conditional.
Giving up, yeah.
Conditioning.
Wanting to be the controller.
We do a sattvic strategy now.
Yeah, the sattvic
strategy. Oh, yeah, okay. I was making my sattvic strategy. Yeah. And then, anything gets appropriated by the false ego, especially our good qualities. C.S. Lewis said, we're never so proud as when we are good. So we appropriate things. And so Baba, that insurmountable charge, and life after life, we're doing the same thing. Can you shut the door?
Oh,
sorry. No, it's not terrible. We're doing the same thing, and we need mercy to do it. So it says, the Bhagavatam will give that mercy. The holy name will give that mercy. The Sankirtan will give that mercy. And anyway, it goes on and on. Pratipadam Purnamis, stages of prema and ecstasy, we'll go through that. So, after chanting the Kirtan Sutra, which represents faith. These are the glories. It's so good. You should understand it so good. And what happens to this is, it's very interesting. He says, lamentation and humility awoke within Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he began reciting another of his own verses. By hearing the meaning of that verse, one can forget all unhappiness and lamentation. So this is what happens. You hear the glories, and then you look at yourself and, oh, man, I'm not in the mood. This is what I have to, you know, it's, you start to reflect. When you hear something of glory, and this is what happens. So Lord Chaitanya, as the natural devotee, he begins to lament. And in that, he quotes the next verse. And nam nam akari bahuda nijasarva shaktis. You see, when something is unattainable, you can only achieve that something if that something has the quality of mercy. This is called asabandha. Asabandha, as devotees, we have hope. We have no hope and we have hope. The no hope is our qualification. The hope is that what we want is merciful. And it can close that gap. So, now Lord Chaitanya begins to think of the compassion and accessibility of this holy name. And the compassion is expressed in nam nam akari bahuda nijasarva shaktis. That the holy name has, there's unlimited names. Nijasarva shaktis, and they have the power. So now, I quoted something last week, and now I found the reference. And this is from the 10th canto. This is really, really amazing. Because what I quoted is, God is so merciful, he has a form of mercy for each individual person. So Lord Chaitanya is hearing about this, that God is so merciful, he has many names, because we have different personalities, we have different tastes, and he reciprocates with us. And not only that, he comes in a form to reciprocate with us. And that form has a name which is Nijasarva Shaktis. And he has a name which is not different from that form of God. So he's so merciful, looking at us. What is our qualification? Who we are? What is our taste? What is our soul? What is our nature? And then he has a form, and he has a name that's not different than that form. So Sanatana Goswami further explains that the Lord manifests a specific spiritual quality for the benefit of each living entity. Shall I read that again?
Yes.
Sanatana Goswami further explains that the Lord manifests a specific spiritual quality for the benefit of every living entity. Since there are innumerable living entities within the confines of material creation, the Lord manifests infinite qualities. Thus, every conscious soul can appreciate the Supreme Lord in a particular way. And even we have that, a person may have so many different ways, a loving person, of reciprocating and making themselves, this is called emotional intelligence, by the way. God has the ultimate emotional intelligence. He can reciprocate. So Lord Chaitanya is hearing this. This is like amazing. And then he hears something even more amazing. That he's not only compassionate, these names are extremely accessible. Tatarpita nimatasmarnena kala. They're not hard and fast rules for chanting these names. And I told the story last time, I'm not going to repeat it again. You remember of Lord Chaitanya going to the bathroom and holding his tongue because he didn't want to bring God in the form of the holy name. You know, when you do deity worship, you have to be very careful of the cleanliness and so many things. He didn't want to bring God, non-different, the name, into the bathroom. You know, he's going to go out to the bathroom. And the boy said, what will you do at the time of death? Oh, I never thought of that before. Lord, that's good. You are Gopal Guru. You are Gopal Guru. There are no hard and fast rules for the name. It's such an incredible process because it really is accessible. If you think of any other spiritual practice that you really want to elevate your consciousness to bring it to New York, all you can do is pretend there's an ecstatic kirtan, but you're a yogi, so you sit in the back like this. So everyone can see that you're a perfect yogi. Doesn't work. Just doesn't work. And then, so he's hearing this, Lord Chaitanya, but even though he's hearing it's accessible, and he's hearing it's so compassionate, he says, itadrasi tavakripa bhagavan, even though you are so merciful, durdaivam indrasam ihajam, I don't have any raga for it. I don't have any attraction for it. And that is the qualification for feeling the name, actually. Because the less qualified you feel for something, the more appreciation and love you feel when you get it. So the fact that as a devotee, he says, I have no devotion. And he's feeling that. It's such a natural consequence of the devotional feeling, just as a natural consequence of the egotistical, self-centered feeling is no love, no feeling. So the opposite, he's feeling. And I did this once. You like this bit? I forgot which program we did, but I said, you know, this is the object of love, right? And this is the person getting love. Right? The more you value what you're getting and the less you think you can pay for it, the more love you'll feel when it touches you. So, humility allows you to feel mercy and love. So it's such kind of, again, it's an anomaly. He's just, and the more he feels that love, the more he feels unqualified for it. The more it comes, the more the treasure of the holy name, the treasure of bhakti, the more it comes to his heart, he keeps on going, I'm not qualified, you know? Like someone comes and, okay, well, we'll make Brit happy today. Brit, you're next, our next millionaire. Brit, here's a cashier's check for $2 million.
Great.
What did I do? Okay, four. Like, I'm even less. Ten. The more you get, the more you feel, I don't deserve. I don't deserve. And the more love you feel when it's given. If it's given to you in love, right, given by someone that loves you, the more you get, the more you feel, I don't deserve it. And so that's the anomaly. As he's going like this, he's feeling more love. Feeling more love, he's appreciating God more. And he's feeling more and more deserving. And as that's increasing, his love is increasing. And he's feeling more and more. Durdaivam, I'm unfortunate. Durdaivam means bad karma. What's the bad karma? I commit offenses to the holy name. And therefore I'm separated from it. So then Lord Chaitanya continues. O Sarup Damodar Goswami and Ramananda Roy, hear from me how one should chant the Hare Krishna mantra to awaken very easily one's dormant love for Krishna. So he said, I have no love. So then Lord Chaitanya said, well, now hear from me actually, because he's giving his instructions on how you can actually get that love. And then what he explains is, and this is the famous verse, is this humility. And specifically here, the relationship between humility and prema is that humility protects the soul from offenses. Lord Chaitanya said, Tara Madhye Sarva Shreshte Nama Sankirtan Nira Aparade Poya Paya Premadan. Of all the practices of devotional service, chanting the holy name is the best. And if you can do it without offense, then you can easily attain love of Godhead. Especially if you could stop criticizing others out of enmity. That is the greatest challenge. If you can do that one thing, which is aparad, distance you from love, the feelings will grow. And this verse is, this is the utter humility. It's once you chant the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind, thinking oneself lower than the store in the street, more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, and ready to offer all respects to others. In such a state of mind, one can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. So this is utter humility. And this is what protects the soul. Person who is like this and really feels it, and it's not weakness, it's strength, because you're resisting the ego that wants to dominate you with impulses of right. Again, if you think of a big powerful leader that has a lot of ego, it would be strength if those impulses were controlled. If the humility was manifested, that would be the strength. So Trinadapi, and this verse is very deep, and the humility is, there's a saying in Bengal, I really wanted to come to Krishna consciousness, you know, and join Lord Chaitanya's movement, but when I heard the third verse of the Shikshastakam, I said, better forget it, this is too difficult for me. Yeah, that practice. And these are the kind of things, by hearing, we have to be cognizant of, and we have to develop in ourselves. And we have to. That's why it's so important to hear the teachings of spiritual life regularly. Otherwise, the conceptions that should rule our world and give us a vision will recede to the background. This should be in the forefront, and it's so difficult. My God. It's like, Belle, you must be tested every minute of the day. I know. It's and you know, from Satyaraj's book, I got a good thing too, which is called, he said prestige comes from a Latin word, which means illusion, like trickery. So it's a trickery that we're the center. Mm. It's a trickery that we're the controller. It's a trickery that we're something unique and special. We are. We're not unique and special as a controller and enjoyer. We're unique and special as a servant. So, and this verse represents nishtha. You're fixed. And what are you fixed in? Kirtaniya Siddhahari. When you can avoid offenses, and when you can become humble. This is Lord Chaitanya's movement. It's just, this verse sums it up. There's four things. Humility, tolerance, respect, and chanting the name always. Saibel, oh my God. Tough. Humility, tolerance, respect. And, you know, if you actually have time to go into these verses, the 11th canto, what that respect means, every living entity, every animal. There's respect for everyone, seeing everyone as part of God. It's so powerful. And it's nishtha. In what? Fixed in your practices and fixed in your attitudes. You're fixed in humility and not criticizing. You're fixed in your tolerance. I wrote a Monday morning greeting, you know, the test I had. I had finished this article, a commentary on Chinese and Brooklyn proverbs. And when people got to the end, you know, because everyone read it because they wanted to get to the Brooklyn proverbs. I said, well, I only put that in because I wanted everybody to read the article. But, you know, now that I'm here, I actually have to come up with one. And I quoted probably the most famous Brooklyn proverb that only Satya Hari will realize. Nice guys finish last.
Very old one.
By who?
Yogi Berra?
No. It wasn't a yogi. Leo the Lip Durocher. Okay,
he was a miserable person.
Well, anyway. But what happened is, I finished the article, and I was right to send it to Kadamba Mala, who edits it, and I have a deadline, you know, and I had to get it out. And then I did everything, and the whole week I was working on it. You know what it is, writing, struggling with the words, dealing with it, finally getting it, shaping. You've given your life. I described it like labor. It's like giving birth to something. It was my child. Mm-hmm. And then I pressed one button, and the most ironic thing happened. Julie reads them all, you see, because she's already laughing. The whole thing, it was Chinese proverbs. The whole thing turned to Chinese letters. I have no idea why it turned to Chinese letters. Really? And then the whole thing was lost. The whole thing was lost. And I had to practice. I really had to practice. And I'm glad that I'm in the philosophy, you know, Krishna consciousness. I mean, it was a struggle. I lost a child. But I had to be tolerant. I had to be tolerant. And not let my mind be disturbed because the world did not go my way, because it's not going to go my way. If you want to be the enjoyer, you have to be the controller, and you're not. So the only way to be happy is love, which doesn't require control. Love doesn't depend on how the world moves. It depends on your attitude and how you respond to it. Bryn, let's go. I want your input.
So I have a question, because what if what you want to control is so that others enjoy, if not for you?
Right.
Then what?
Well, it's basically the same in one sense. You know, there's a certain level of human, like you lose someone. You should feel it. You know, you feel for others, they suffer, there's a certain amount of compassion. That's there. You know, like, relations with family, you can't give them up before Baba the feelings. You know, and why should you give them up? You can use them in Krishna's service. But the same thing, who's moving it? It's God. So there has to be some level of tolerance. And some abstraction of yourself that, you know, this is the way I wanted the world. So God had another plan. And then you have to see what that plan is. You know, there's karma, which does, you know, I think that the difficulty in our vision is we always look at things for ourselves and others, that happiness is when the world conforms to our desires and other people's desires. But God's happiness is... happiness is when that soul becomes purified. So it doesn't necessarily move. So even if you kind of want to do something for people and now they can't, you're still carrying the will of God, and there's still something in God's plan for there. So I like the human element, But I also like a little bit of the intellectual element there too. That help?
Mm-hmm.
Think about it, because I want it to be clear. But now what happens is when Lord Chaitanya is spoken this way, his humility increased. Now it increased again. And he began praying to Krishna that he could discharge pure devotional service. So now he's thinking, again, I want to have bhakti. So the humility increased. So he's then it says, prema prabha, that the nature of this prema is you don't feel you have a scent of it. So now he doesn't have a scent of it, but he wants it. And he doesn't want anything else but it. I don't have it. I want this, and I don't have any other desire for this. And you know what that's called? It's called Uttama Bhakti. Anya Bilashita Shunyam Jnana Karmajana. I don't have any other desire, but Anukulyena Krishna, but to please Krishna. So it's interesting in bhakti, the desire for it is the same thing of having it. But unless you feel a lack of it, you won't desire it. And this particular verse, can you guys give me another like good 25 minutes?
Yeah.
I I'm a sensitive speaker, and I'm feeling this is like I already gave a feast. How much more food can there be? You know, so kind of just to please me on my birthday, stuff your faces. Happy birthday, everyone eat the cake. This is the great thing about Vaishnavism. When it comes to festival, our service is to enjoy. Right? Imagine we came to someone's birthday. Yeah, happy birthday meal. Oh, I'm not hungry now. No, everybody, oh, great meal. So, okay, we'll give more of the feast, and then we'll end with kirtan, and then we have some nice prasad too. And we can spend a little time. Anya bilashi tash. So this verse is Uttama Bhakti. And it represents the stage of ruchi. Nishta, when you're fixed, very quickly comes ruchi or taste. And why is that? Because taste is bhakti, and when it's only bhakti, it's taste. Because the Lord's pleasure potency is devotion. That's what pleasure is. So when you have devotion, that's only devotion, then it's really tasty. And the practical experience I had is when I went to the Himalayas for the first time in Rishikesh, and the water was coming off, and you know, I tasted the water. And in Bhagavad Gita, it said, Rasaham Apsukha, I am the taste of water. What do you mean taste of water? But when water is just water, it's tasty. So when bhakti is just bhakti, it's tasty. So now he's become fixed, and now there's legitimate ruchi, or taste. And this is Shreya Kairaiva Chandikaranam. It's like a white lotus, the seven glories in the first verse, it's like a white lotus and the moon. And the nature of a white lotus, when the moon hits it, it will bloom and its beauty. So this is like the holy name. Now you're fixed, so the full force of the holy name is coming on the consciousness. And it's auspicious, which means real devotion is coming from your heart. And it's not mixed with other things. So it actually has a quality of pleasure. I'm not going to go into details now because I can see there's a limit to the details. But this verse, actually, Rupa Goswami wrote a verse on the definition of pure devotional service, which has a Sarup Lakshanam, a primary definition, and a how would you define the difference between Sarup Lakshanam and Tattvastha Lakshanam? You have a good differentiation for that? No?
Okay. The primary and the secondary?
Primary and secondary. Yeah, one is what it is, and another thing is what it's not. So that's how you define something, by what it is. But then to make it really specific, you have to say what it's not to get a precise definition. So what is Uttama Bhakti? What is it? Anukulyena Krishnanu Shilanam Bhakti Uttama. It's the feeling of pleasing God. I'm doing things, not selfishly, but I'm doing things love, universal love. I love God, everything. And what's the Tathastalakshanam? Yes, that, but make sure without any extraneous desires, and don't cover it by a desire for gyan or liberation. I'm doing this for myself, peacefulness or karma. Don't cover it with these activities. Very precise. So same thing. This is what it is. Here's the Sarup Lakshanam. Bhavatad Bhaktir Ahoitaki Twayi. Just, I am your eternal servitor. Bhavatad Bhaktir Ahoitaki. This is a Sarup Lakshanam. The real thing of bhakti, I want to serve you. And the Tatastha Lakshanam, Nadanam, I don't want anything else. I don't want wealth. Nadanam, Najanam, the Sundarim, Kavitam, nothing else. Not even liberation. I don't. Birth after birth, which means I don't even want liberation. So now this is Ruchi. Now it's getting interesting because now you're chanting with like Uttama Bhakti. You're fixed and you're concentrated and there's taste. So now what happens between the next verse? In great humility, considering himself a conditioned soul of the material world, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu again expressed his desire to be endowed with the service of the Lord. So now, the humility has increased so much that he feels now I'm in the ocean of material existence. The ocean, the forest fire, right? It's the same thing. The ocean, it's endless. The material existence. Bhutva, bhutva, pradiyate. In the Bhagavad Gita, it says this world is created and destroyed again and again and again. Where the children on the beach making the sandcastle, and then digging the trowel, and the water's coming, and somehow we're thinking we're going to prevent the ocean from coming, and another trowel, and then bhutva, and again and again and again. So now he says, and this is the next stage of devotion. Because when that taste comes and it matures, then what happens is, by the chanting of the holy name in this mood, then what happens is, when that taste is maturing, it goes from the point where ruchi, whenever it goes away, I pull it back, to it's just flowing towards God. There's no, you don't have to pull it back. It's just moving towards that. We're addicted to God, and the consciousness is consumed. If you look at bhakti as a voice in the heart, at the beginning, it's kind of like I like Krishna and I like this and this thing too and this more, and then it grows. And when that voice becomes consuming, I want Krishna, I want Krishna, then at that point you get like a scent of your spiritual identity. And that's what's happening in this verse. There's a scent, and it says, I'll show you, it says, Ayi nanu tanuja kinkara patitam mam vishame bhavam budhau kripaya tavapada pankaja stututuli sadhusam. I am your eternal servitor, yet somehow I have fallen in this ocean of birth and death. Please pick me up from this ocean of death and place me as one of the atoms at your feet. So now identity is coming. I am your eternal servitor. There's a strong identity. Not just that you want it, now you're actually feeling it. I am your eternal servitor. And this word ayi, which means oh, one commentator which I read, I asked one other Sanskrit scholar to disagree, So you have to look it up to get the definitive fate. And both were great scholars. Ayi is feminine. And if it was masculine, it would be more like, hey, Nanda Tanuja Kinkara. So it's Ayi. So it means his Lord Chaitanya, why did he come? Because he wanted the mood of Radha. So now he's having that identity. And he wants mercy like anything, because more than the forest fire material existence, he's in the ocean. The ocean of Madhva Acharya, one of the great Acharyas, he said something that was very powerful. He said that we have suffered so much in our sojourn in the material world, life after life, that our tears could fill an ocean. We can imagine that, right? How much we cried in this life. He says that he's feeling, and therefore, why cry? Cry for Krishna. I want Krishna. I want to get out of the world. Don't think this class is about renunciation. You can go to the morning Bhagavatam class. Julie got it. Okay. It's about dedication, and you want it so bad. And where you are, you give yourself to God. That's all. That becomes your objective. And this is the verse where I got that beautiful commentary. Comes down the stairs of compassion to be suffering, to teach the devotees. And of course, this is kind of a special kind of suffering that's not really suffering, but is at the same time. And in our philosophy, we can solve any contradiction by just saying a chinchibeta simultaneously one and different. But I'll explain it. There's a commentary by Vishwanath. So good, the audience is still with me. Yeah. And we're going to go further. And kripaya, wow, it's insurmountable. I need mercy. That's the only way you'll achieve perfection in any path, even yoga. That's why Ishvara Pranidhanva is the recommended object of meditation, because it's an object of meditation that can help you. And you can't achieve anything on your own. So this mood is just, and it's so sweet, even hearing of this mood. And we see how the ego covers this mood. It covers this actual sweet mood, and how the exploitation in the modern world gives this mood a bad name. Because the vulnerability gets exploited. But without vulnerability, there can't be love. And that's why community is so important. The places where you trust serves you better than you can achieve your happiness individually. So, and interesting, he wants to be dust. This is such an interesting point, right? Because why? He's in the insurmountable ocean of material existence. What does that mean? It means Hare Krishna, you're focusing your mind. I hate, I love, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Why is he present? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And so many things are coming in the mind. Why is this? Why is that? We're not fixed, our mind. But what is dust? Dust sticks to the feet. The mind doesn't stick to the feet. The dust sticks to the feet. I want the dust. Julie, you want to be the dust?
Yes.
The dust sticks to the feet, right? We want to be the dust on Krishna's feet. And we need the mercy to get that. So this is the prerequisite for actually achieving prema. It's this deep longing in an identity. And there, it's not just asking for mercy. This is the path of mercy. Mercy is causeless. Why do anything? But no. You attract mercy by the expression of your attitude. And that's the Hare Krishna mantra. We're banging on the door. We can't get in unless it's open. We're not going to get in unless we knock. And if it opens, it's still mercy. And a beautiful analogy I read, it's like sugar cane juice. It's such mercy. Then when I went to the Padyatra in India, we were walking. This is one of the great joys. Walking 20 kilometers from village to village, waking up, going to the well in the morning, bathing in the well, and then walking out into the sunset, chanting Hare Krishna, with this pure devotee named Radha Jyoti, leading the kirtans. This guy is so pure that in the floods in Mayapur, he was still cooking with the water up to his waist. The guy is so pure, and he would chant, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama Hare Hare. And he could chant that endlessly. It seemed like he could go on forever until he got higher. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So it said, so I'm out there, and the greatest joy, right, is when you passed a sugarcane field and you sat on the bullock cart and started to, and you get the mercy, you have to chew. You have to squeeze. So now we'll go. Whoa. Oh no, we're doing good. We're doing good. In my fanatical Vaidhi Bhakti regulation mind, natural humility and great eagerness then awoke in Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He prayed, able to chant the Maha Mantra in ecstatic love. So now, what happens now is by that chanting, with that kind of feeling of exclusivity, and I want, and it's so loud, then God gives you His internal potency. We by nature are servants of Krishna. By nature we have love for Krishna. But when you really want to love Krishna, what pleases Krishna? His loving potency, Ladini Shakti, the essence is Krishna, God, Krishna, love of Godhead. So that comes to your heart. That comes to your heart, that love of Godhead. And it increases the longing, and your identity starts to become, and then you really begin to pray. And what are you praying for? When will my eyes be decorated with tears of love flowing constantly when I chant your holy name? When will my voice choke up, and when will the hairs of my body stand on end at the recitation name? You want Baba. And what he's explaining here is these very, very deeply ecstatic states. That when you have this kind of love for Krishna, and it's so powerful, when you come in contact with objects of devotion, the reaction of the mind will be so powerful that it will affect the prana in your body. And when the prana in your body becomes affected, it comes in contact with the core, subtle, foundational elements of your material body. So when it comes in contact with the water element, you begin to profusely cry. Like when Lord Chaitanya was in kirtan in ecstasy, it described it was like the Ganga was coming out of his eyes. And when you come in contact with the earth element, you stun. The air element, your hairs are standing on the end. I once was with Jamuna, the great Vaishnavi in our tradition. I recommend you read her biography. I stayed with her for a couple of days at my friend's house at the 20th anniversary of her deities. And she was telling me a time where her hair was standing on end in relationship with Prabhupada. It was a very, very beautiful story. But then I remember that Tamal Krishnamaraj told me that Prabhupada said that Yamuna had bhava. So bhava are these ecstatic... So he wants that. He doesn't want the ecstatic symptoms. He wants to have the love that caused it. That deep love. So he's praying for this. And Lord Chaitanya, there's beautiful songs about Lord Chaitanya. He has a similar prayer. Goranga bolite habe pulaka sarira hari hari bolite nayane babe nira. When will the tears come? So, you know, I like giving this type of class. This is kind of advanced Krishna consciousness to some degree. But the practice at the beginning of Krishna consciousness, you have to have a goal. The definition of sadhana bhakti is to use your senses to get prema, or the goal. So you have to hear about the goal. And even when I was reading this, I said, I don't want to forget this. This is the goal. I want these tears. I want these feelings in my heart. And this is Anandam Bhuti Vardhanam from the beginning, the seven glories, because this bliss has no bounds. This is real ecstasy. This is crying in ecstasy. The hairs are standing on end. And it's like he said, tears will flow constantly. It's described like a monsoon cloud. If you've ever been in India during the monsoon, this cloud will come and it's like incredible torrents of rain. And then it'll stop, and then another cloud will come. So this is like Lord Chaitanya, the Ganga flowing from his eyes. How? Reciting the name. And at this particular stage, you enter into it. Now, what has happened is, in this particular stage, you enter into these high esoteric practices of Krishna consciousness, that this is when they talk about the Shastra. When you have this, then they talk about where someone has a spiritual identity and they're identifying with a particular role model in Krishna's Leela. I want to be like a cowherd boy, or I want to be like a gopi. And they're identifying with this. And then what happens is they start to read. This is called Shravana Dasha. The first stage of real spontaneous devotional service is that you become eager to hear about the people whose love you covet. And when you hear about their love, that same love comes to you. And all the emotions that are in the pastimes of Krishna through the particular person you're cultivating comes into your heart. And that becomes your sadhana. See, it's bhava, but you're practicing for prema. And the difference between bhava and prema, it's like the sun rays and the sun globe. Laxity and density. But bhava is, you know, it's no ordinary thing. You pray for bhava. All our practices is that one day we may get this. And what happens is the heart melts. Which means you became free from offense. Because it says the heart doesn't melt because we're still affected by the offenses we commit. Now you're free of offense and the heart melts. Friend, you remember at the Puri Yatra when that Baba Bhakta, Fakir Mohan came, right?
Mm-hmm. I just remember him saying,
bring the baby!
Yeah. Bring the baby.
Yeah, he wanted the mothers with the kid. You were there, right, Saibel, right? But did you hear him sing?
Mm-hmm. I have it recorded somewhere. But I'm still aware.
Gopina. You know, it's like, oh my God. It's amazing. And I have one other kirtan from a Baba Bhakta. He was I forgot the name, but Gauravani knew this person too. He was the kirtan singer for Ramesh Baba. And we spent a day with him.
Bridge Basi Mohan?
Bridge Basi. There's someone sent it to me, the tape. I'm with him and we're talking and he's singing. And you know, you hear that type of singing and that type of mood. So it's, and I can't go into all the wonderful details, but one thing you should understand is the external symptoms can be imitated. They must be born on the internal symptoms, which is tolerance, complete, and not just detachment, indifference to material things. And there are 9 symptoms: detachment, tolerance. What are these? You know any of them? Anyway, there are 9 symptoms: real attachment to the holy name, and attached to the holy places, and you know, real. And then from those kind of qualities, this gets born. And this Bhakti Siddhanta said, by the power of kirtan, meditation of one's sarup arises, your identity. And I thought about this. You know, you can chant within Krishna's name is the form of Krishna, the qualities of Krishna, the pastimes of Krishna are there. Nam, Rup, Guna, Lila. You chant the name of Krishna, his form will come into your mind. And it will be God's form. And then when you chant more, you'll feel his qualities, like his compassion personally for you. And then his Lila, his pastimes will be there. So technically, in an advanced stage, we're in Krishna's pastimes. So within the holy name, we're also there. And our identity is also there. And our identity in relationship to Krishna will actually manifest. So by the power of kirtan, meditation on one's sarup arises. So, great eagerness comes. And then, by this great, then he says, separation from Krishna awoke various mellows of distress, lamentation, and humility. Thus Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu spoke like a crazy man. Now he attains prema. So you see, the other 6 verses are the practice, now the goal. And he attains prema. And prema has the heart even melts more, and the heart softens completely, and you get a real sense. It's called mamata. It's not, I am yours, Krishna, you are mine. It's a possessiveness. You are my son. You are my friend. You are my lover. And what happens is, it says, the Sanskrit of the verse here, Yugayatam nameshena, O Govinda, feeling your separation, I'm considering a moment to be like 12 years or more. Tears are flowing from my eyes like torrents of rain. I'm feeling all vacant in the world if you're absent. These are internal emotional symptoms that not only indicate his prema, because this is Lord Chaitanya, you see, and now he's completely entered into the identity he was aspiring for. He wanted the mood of Radha, and now he has the, this is not, we cannot attain that or aspire for that, because he is Radha. So now he's actually attained his identity, and he's attained it through the feelings of separation. It's very, very interesting, this separation. It makes its appearance, it says, in the dark night of the soul, unbearable pain of separation. It's the greatest feeling of loss imaginable, multiplied by 1,000 times. But somehow or other, there's no duality. So that sense of I want Krishna is being with Krishna at the same time. So you enter into it, and now you have Krishna. And the symptoms here, a moment feels like 12 years or more, and I wrote something that's really interesting. Yeah, misery takes longer time than union, or distress takes a longer time than, you know, time flies when you're having a good time. And when you're not, time is relative, actually. So one moment feels like 12 years or more. Which is interesting, because that's how many years Lord Chaitanya spent in his internal bhajan. Because the last 18 years of his life he was in Puri, 6 years with the devotees, and then 12 years he went into his internal bhajan. And this is also, in classical Shastra, the symptom of Mahabhava. Now, what Lord Chaitanya wanted, he wanted the love of his devotee, not just the love of his devotee, but the love of his devotee, the topmost devotee, and not just the love of the topmost devotee, but the love of the topmost devotee at the height of her love. And this is incredible feelings of the deepest separation, where a moment feels like 12 years or more, and I'm feeling completely vacant in your absence, because I'm missing the greatest thing, which is Krishna and love of Krishna. And, you know, don't give me a dog to, you know, pacify me with this great loss, you know, or get me married again. This is the greatest thing, and the only thing that will pacify it is the greatest thing. So the separation is just so intense. So he leaves his sadhaka, his practitioner, at the last six verses, and now he's Radha. And now he's in the mood of Radha, in this incredible advanced stage, which is indescribable. And somehow or other, this separation is better than union. And this is what Radha said: when I consider the difference between union and separation, I think separation is better. When I'm together with Krishna, I see him only in one place. When he's away from me, I see all the worlds filled with him. And Sanatana Goswami, I don't know how they even got ice in that time, but he gave the example of ice. The only thing I can relate it to is the Good Humor Man that has dry ice, and it's cold and it burns. So it's one thing that has the opposite effect. So this has the opposite effect. It's pain and separation, but it's the opposite effect. It's the greatest bliss. So now Lord Chaitanya is like entered into this intensified prema, and this is the perfection of chanting. Crying in separation. And Prabhupada said we should chant like a child crying for his mother. And then what happens is the ecstatic symptoms of envy, great eagerness, humility, zeal, and supplication all became manifest at once. So not just physical symptoms, this is called Vyabhachari Bhavs. And that ocean of the love and the feelings of Radha are coming so many powerful contradictory emotions. It's like an ocean with waves. There's a wave of feeling, of humility, and then supplication, and then boom, and then envy crashing, and it's overwhelming. And then comes the verse of the ultimate feeling of Mahabhav, the highest ecstasy. Now he's achieved it. And somehow, even though he's achieved it, it's so practical for us that I wrote an article called Prabhupada and Radhabhav. Because this says, I know no one but Krishna as my Lord, and he shall remain so even if he handles me roughly by his embrace, or makes me brokenhearted by not being present before me. He is completely free to do anything and everything, for he is all my worshipable Lord. this is actually Radharani's words, and he's feeling this. This is what he wanted to feel, the topmost love. And what happened is, Krishna separated from Radha to increase her love. And then Radha's friends came to Krishna and said, Radha's friends came to her and said, "No, you should now, defy Krishna, and you should." And then she's saying, "No, love is unconditional. Love is unconditional." And Krishna is a worthy object of love. This is rasa. He's worthy. He's not just some whatever it is, jilting another lady and running off with someone else. But you may make me brokenhearted by not being present before me. You may handle me, embrace. You're freely, completely free to do anything and everything, for you are my worshipful Lord unconditionally. And then there's so many verses. But if you want to understand this verse, go to wavesofdevotion.com and put in Radha, Bhav, and Prabhupada. And I wrote an article on this. And now this is the highest level of prema. And this is Sarvatma Snapanam. In the first verse, the glories of the holy name, you will be bathed in God. You will be overwhelmed with God. So that each one of your senses will see, hear, feel, taste, and smell Krishna simultaneously. Even if all your senses see Krishna, you see someone by hearing, right? They say Radha Muralidhar. Now you see Radha Muralidhar through the ears. So all your senses see Krishna. That's too much. But now this is Odharyas, Sarvatma Snapanam, bathe. They will see, feel, touch, hear Krishna. Overwhelmed, complete. The goal of life, can't even describe it. The love that God is seeking, and how does he get it? Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtan. He gets it by Sri Krishna Sankirtan. He got this by Kirtan. And kirtan is the sadhana and sadhya. It's the practice and the goal. Initially you practice kirtan to get love, and then when you achieve the highest love, out of love you do kirtan. So kirtan is the symptom of the highest love. So now I'll stop here. I don't even have any more energy to go any deeper in any verses. I'm already overwhelmed with prema bhakti. My hairs are standing on end. A moment has seemed like 12 years or more. We're having fun, so time is flying. But I'll ask, anybody have any reflections on the class or questions?
I'm wondering about this notion that you were speaking of in the beginning about humility. The deeper the humility, the higher the love. Mm. And I'm just wondering about this notion of self-love and the need for self-love in order to be able to love another. And humility might appear contrary. I'm speaking more psychologically and asking if you can explain it, this in relation to that. How a lack of self-love can inhibit us in being able to love another. And yet here we learn that humility enables love of another. And so, yes, I'm conflating self-love with humility. Can you explain the relationship?
I'll explain it, but there's another seminar I give called The Power and Culture of Humility. Mm-hmm. And, I would say in this, it's a very, very deep concept, but I would say the self-love comes with being loved. That's your real wealth. It's not just you love yourself, but why do you love yourself? Well, let's put it self-worth or self-esteem comes from being loved. So I like that example of the child. The child is humble, but feeling worth, not because of its size, its power, its scent, but because it's feeling love. And that's the nature of love. It doesn't depend on your dimension. Right, Anandam Buddhi Vardhanam, you can experience more love than God, because love doesn't require your grandeur. It requires your consciousness, and the soul has that ability. So I would say that it comes with it, and there's a whole differentiation, because if there's not self-love, ego is involved. And the reason you hate yourself is because you want to be great and you're feeling not. So it's kind of, and I want to make clear, because we all have our issues of low self-esteem. It's not the only thing we are. We also have our love, but we have these issues. That part of us that has low self-esteem is saying, I am unhappy because I am not this. And it means ego. I want to be superior. So I think, you know, true humility doesn't touch on that. Because you're happy where you are. You know, you do have humility means self-love, because you're happy. And I don't, there's the same way you call it love or esteem, but you're happy. And why are you happy? You're happy with what you are because you have a relationship that nourishes your position. Bryn.
You know, this is my question.
I want it, Bryn. You're the form of function here.
But the question can also go further back, because not everyone feels love. You know, like in order to, maybe if
I understand your point, yeah.
Yeah. Like maybe if you have a relationship with Krishna, then you can feel that and it's not dependent on anything. But if you don't have that initial thing where you're like, yes, I feel love, and so therefore you're not feeling...
It's going to cause a problem.
It's going to cause a problem.
It's definitely going to... Yeah, and we'll go back even further. Why? And then we get into law of karma. But I'm just saying, yeah, I understand your point. You know, like, but I'm just saying, these are what he's bringing up is a difficult, subtle question, you know, about self-esteem, humility. You know, it's a very, very subtle thing. So you're saying, what about someone who doesn't feel love? They're going to have a problem. Mm-hmm. And the problem is going to manifest. Well, in one sense, you know, it cuts two ways. Sometimes that person becomes more humble. I'll tell a story actually about Veer Bhajaram. You know, I went to his wedding, right? And at one point in the night, it was Pumpkin Hollow. Everyone would stand up and we'd glorify him, you know? And Arjuna was there and he pointed to his son, stand up. His son stood up and spoke. And everybody glorified him. Then I spoke to his brother. You know, he said, you know, everybody's glorifying him. But when he was 16 years old, I got a call from the police station to get him out of jail. And then I also know the story that, you know, he didn't grow up with a father. His mother had to work. His guru saw him. I'm telling you personal things. He was in the street alone as a young child. And his guru, because it was Tamal Krishnamurti, had to put him with some, you know. So when I told that to Radhanath Swami, he said, you know, that's why he has so much compassion. So sometimes that other thing can happen. You know, and you see, everybody loves Veer Bhajaram. He has unlimited compassion and love. But that also can be Krishna's mercy. You know, that experience, you know, so it's all karma. What conditions God puts you in to bring you to a higher level? But it's going to be a problem. And if we're in a position, if someone's a mother or someone's a friend, and we don't give that love to someone, we can screw them up. And then in the next life, we'll be the person that doesn't get it. You know? And the thing is, you know, without someone who feels I'm not getting love, giving them more complexes, that actually what happens is, you know, karma is so vast. So the person is very poor. He may have a thousand lifetimes as the richest man in the world, but he had to this lifetime have that. And the person who's the richest time in the world may have karma for a thousand lifetimes as the poorest man in the world. So we can't judge people at all. So it all gets down to karma, and that's another class. And karma means that according to what God's seen in the past, he has a certain progression of experiences to you. Conditions you need to learn something. When I went to the cemetery yesterday, this is a whole story. Anne Mary. I had lunch with her and her husband, and they took me to this incredible cemetery. I don't want to tell people how beautiful it is, but people want a cemetery. So we're looking at the tombstones. It's so much fun. So one lady, you know, you have written what you want on your tombstone. So one lady said, when you look at it, said, "Get over it." But the best tombstone was not there. The best tombstone is in Washington, D.C., from W.C. Fields, the most famous comedian at the turn of the 20th, of the early 1900s. The most famous comedian was W.C. Fields. W.C. stands for bathroom or water closet. So he was the most famous comedian. So he was born in Philadelphia and he died in Washington. And when you go by his tombstone, the epitaph that he wrote was, "At least it was in Philadelphia." Okay. Any other reflections? Okay. Now, we don't. The drama had to go. So how do you want to do a little 10, 15 minutes of kirtan? How will you do it?
We'll just play the harmonica without the
mandanga. Yeah. Oh. Saibel, you
want to
try the mandanga?
No, I'm not worthy. Come on.
No, that's fine. We can just...
What's that?
We can just play the harmonica.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, well, 10 minutes of kirtan, and then please stay for Vasada, okay?